Hello, everyone, and welcome to Minute 52 of Season 7 of Movie Around Minute, the daily podcast where we yippee-ki-yay our way through the 1995 Bruce Willis action flick, Die Hard with a Vengeance, 1 minute at a time. I'm Rob, and joining me once again today is John Parker of the Bat Minute. Welcome back to the show, John.
Thanks for having me back. I'm going to do this for the whole episode.
I think you're going to get very hoarse if you do that, but, you know, feel free. Maybe your name is Vanderflug.
Yeah. Oh, no. I think I'm dropping it.
Charting Vanderfloof six times fast with that. So minute 52 begins with a tracking shot of this humongous lobby and ends with Otto taking a souvenir.
Exciting.
Yeah. So we ended things yesterday with, you know, Ricky going down into the subway with a bunch of the goons and two cops, while at the same time, Simon and another five of his giants, you know, are going into some other building around there.
Jeremy Irons, right? It really dawned on me in this minute that I don't know what it is. Maybe it's just because his hair. He really does look German. And I don't know what it... If I didn't know where he was from or anything, I would be like, yeah, okay, he's a German man.
No, it's because he has bleach blonde hair in this movie.
That very well could be part of it, because of course that is the stereotype.
They give him the Aryan look here.
To be fair, when I first went to Berlin and I went to a restaurant, first restaurant I got served at, the waiter was literally the stereotype of every German you've ever... He was a mountainous man, like these guys. He was a mountain of a man, blondest hair you've ever seen in your life as well. And I was like, oh, this is perfect. I'm in Germany.
and he probably had, like, piercing blue eyes.
Oh, he did, absolutely. It was every stereotype you've ever imagined. Like, yeah.
Hey, why not? Yeah. You know, if you want to get the full experience.
Exactly. This is fine, because why should it be? But his English wasn't great, which is fine. You know, my German's terrible. But it was just funny when he produced the check for me, and he was just, it sounded very blunt. He was like, service is not included in Germany, and slammed it on the table. Oh, brilliant, though. This is what I want. This is the whole experience.
And then you basically said, okay, we'll leave you a little bit of a tip.
Oh, I did. Yeah.
You know, out of fear. That's the thing. Yeah, interesting. I wonder if Jeremy Irons really has blue eyes like this, or if he has contacts in this movie. What do you think?
That's a good question. I'm tempted to say he does have eyes like this, because I mean, I've seen him in loads of stuff, but
in The Lion King, he didn't have piercing blue eyes.
Yeah, very very different in that. He had a whole different look in general. You know,
yeah. He had a lot more hair.
But the thing is, despite him being like a huge, you know, actor over here and everything, I might just always be thinking of him from this, because to me, this is his best role. So I might be wrong. I'm tempted to say he has very blue eyes, though. But
I don't know.
Was the most recent thing I saw him in? I saw him in that Watchmen show they did.
He seems too, you know, his eyes seem too blue.
Yeah, yeah.
Again, it could be that they found a way just to enhance the way that it looked at the time to make him look more Aryan. I don't know.
Touch it up a little bit. Like these days, they just CGI that, you know.
Yeah, or they just give him contacts and that's it. You know, it's a simple thing to do also. So, yeah, I don't know. That's interesting. I wonder if there's like a place where, you know, we can, or, you know, like IMDb doesn't tell you necessarily people's eye colors. So
I will find out for you. No, right now.
Well, actually, when I looked on IMDb at the pictures, his eyes are not as piercing as.
They're absolutely not. You are correct. I think they might be brown.
Yeah, that's what it looks also.
See, there you go. That's evidence then. No matter how big and successful he is, no matter what he's in, I'm thinking of this movie, because this is the movie I probably first saw him in. Because as of recording, I'm 38, so. This is probably my introduction to him. So I'll always think of him like this. Like, I always think of this as being his hair, even though he doesn't really have this hair in most other things.
Correct. Oh, I mean, the hair, you know for sure that it's bleached here. You know, there's no question about that.
It was the time of doing that, though. It was hip, you know.
And again, I don't think they did it because it was hip. I think they did it because it fits in with his character. You know, they want to make him seem as German as possible.
Absolutely. But also at the same time, I know we know at this point, but at the same time, I think making him quite different looking was to sort of contrast Hans. Like, let's make him the opposite.
No, but he's also, I mean, as I think you mentioned yesterday, we, you know, when we see him later in the movie, you know, with an undershirt on, you see that he has muscles. You know,
Hans, he's in really good shape.
That's right. Hans is not in good shape. Hans is not in bad shape, but he's not in, you know, he's not in bodybuilding shape or whatever.
No, he's just like a guy.
That's right. Exactly. But here, you know, and I mean, it still blows my mind that, you know, looking at how Jeremy Irons looks in this movie and then just thinking 4 years earlier, you know, he did Reversal of Fortune where he was, you know, Von Bülow, and they look like, you know, day and night.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, absolutely.
You know, physically. Yeah. So
that just shows how good he is, you know. Sure. We've had that with Batman. Well, we haven't got to this one yet, but with the Batman series, you know, Christian Bale can do the Machinist and then turn up to the Batman set in shape. It's like, hang on. In the Machinist, you literally starved yourself nearly to death.
That's right.
to the point where they were worried. They were like, Christian, what are you doing? You've got to come and film Batman soon. He's like, don't worry. Leave it to me.
Well, no, there are actors who've been injured by doing those things. I think George Clooney was injured when he did Syriana because he had to gain a lot of weight and then lost it. And I think he said that he messed up his vertebrae because of that or something. Ooh, something like that.
Not good to do it quick. No.
So Simon and his men are in this huge lobby, and we see that there are three security guards standing around. And then as he walks up, you know, we hear him say, please inform Mr. Little that Mr. Vanderflug is here. And then the security goes, Vandergard? Vanderflug? And then he picks up the phone and goes, there's a Mr. Vanderflug for Mr. Little. Now, I spent way too much time trying to find out if that is a real name, Vanderflug.
Well, Vanderflug, or if it's like a reference to something.
Exactly. And I couldn't find anything except for references to this movie. That was the only thing that I could find. So if anyone out there knows what a Vanderflug is, you know, if it's some sort of Dutch word that, I don't know, let me know.
that's actually a good point, because I would assume it is Dutch, but he's still playing a German, isn't he?
Maybe here he's pretending to be Dutch. I mean, he's no longer Bob Thompson, you know, that we know.
Yeah. I mean, he just seems to be doing his normal German accent. But you know, but then again, it could be the character's critique of Americans. Oh, they don't understand the difference.
It could be. That's very true.
There is actually something right at the beginning as well, which I didn't notice until because I always have the video playing in the background here. In an upcoming minute, we'll talk about it a little bit. There's a moment where someone notices.
Yeah, we'll get there. Boots. We will get there. Yeah.
But in second one of this, Jeremy Irons is wearing, from what it looks like to me at least, he's wearing military boots.
Yes, he is.
And his pants there are tucked into them.
That's right.
But that's breaking the character. I think that's an accident in filming.
I would think you're right.
Because, like, the character he's playing, we're about to find out, you know, he's a flower guy. Why would he be wearing those?
That's right. No clue. See, I didn't notice from what you just pointed out now. I did notice that later on that does come up. You know, and that's also something that I never noticed until now. But we'll get there, I think, tomorrow. So we'll hold off to talk about that.
Yeah, I'll come back to that one.
Yeah. But so the entire time that they're in here, the alarm is blaring. And
I couldn't believe that. I was like, can't someone turn it off? Like, we know there's an emergency, but everyone's aware now. You know, everyone's evacuated who can.
That's right. And what, you know, and just to show how comfortable all these guys are, three of them just sit on like the bench. You know, they sit there politely waiting, stuff like that.
That's all crucial to the plan, though, is like playing it straight.
You know? Mm-hmm. Correct.
Actually, speaking of the plan in general, I actually love how this whole plan, it's incredibly similar what they're doing to the first movie, but without copying the first movie.
Correct.
Like it's almost so smart. I thought it was so clever of the writers, because I know the origins of this. You know, it was originally getting written as a different film, blah blah blah.
Mm-hmm.
But do that, to make it so similar without ripping it off, that's genius.
Yeah, for sure.
And in fact, to the point of, you know, it even does pretend we're doing one thing for the revolution, but in reality, we're doing a different thing for ourselves.
Correct.
Which is what happens in the first movie.
Are they doing it for the revolution?
No, but they make people think they're doing it because they're these international terrorists. But they're not. They just want the gold.
Correct.
He lies, if you remember, because he's like, "Oh, we're gonna sink it, and because we just want rid of the gold and all the power." But he doesn't care about that.
No, but one of the differences is that in the first movie, Hans's men knew that it was on a scheme.
That's the difference. Yeah. Yeah.
Here, it's a little bit more of a way to, you know, not some people are in on it and some people aren't.
Yeah, I think like these guys with him here, I imagine they're not in on it. I think they're just like they've got their role to play and they're doing it.
Well, I mean, when you look at the end of the movie, most of his men are getting ready, you know, for them, you know, creating their own country, that type of thing. And creating their own army. So I guess they must be at least in on the fact that they're here to rob in order to be able to go do something.
That's true. That's true, actually. Yeah, they're on board with that too quickly for it to be new information. Yeah.
Right. Right. I mean, obviously Targo is the one who doesn't know everything here. But that also makes sense because, you know, Targo is being two-timed on by by Katya. So, you know, but we don't find that out for a very long time in the movie. So,
oh, you'll get to that eventually.
That's right. So I've just spilled the beans. Sorry, everyone.
You've ruined it. Cancel the podcast.
That's right. Oh well, sorry.
It's over. The dream's done.
There you go. Well, come on. If someone's listening to this minute by minute, they hopefully have seen the whole movie at least once. You know.
I can't wrap my head around people who don't. It's strange. Right. You know, you do you, listeners. You do you, but it's peculiar.
Yeah. It's true. And then the shot changes and we're no longer inside of this lobby. We're back on the streets. We get an exterior shot of the dump trucks coming in, and we see even a bridge layer on one of them. And you know, they do a nice job of all the stuff. And then, you know, we see that Targo is there. He jumps off the side of one of the trucks and starts giving orders. He goes, "Go down 20 meters. Come on."
He's great. I'm gonna talk about him a little bit more in other minutes, but I love that guy.
Yeah. So we just see him just for a few seconds, and then we're back down in the subway. And Ricky is talking, and he goes, and one of the, I think Gunther says to him, "A lot of steam down here." And he goes, yeah, we snapped a couple of the steam pipes. It's like a sauna. We got the subway guys to shut down the third rail. So, I mean, it's interesting that Ricky is aware of the fact that, you know, we talked about this yesterday, that why is Ricky the one, why is he their guide? You know?
Yeah.
But apparently he knows about the fact that they asked to turn off the third rail, you know, so that
maybe,
there's
maybe he's got some experience working in this, and that's why he's the guy they've sent. Maybe
could be,
because, or it could just purely be the security issue of like, well, we can only really allow him down there at this point because everything's, you know, screwed up at the moment,
right. And I mean, they're trying to distract Ricky by talking to him, you know, having Gunther talk to him, and then, you know, we see behind him that they basically knock out the other two cops with you know, they have like these futuristic Star Trek type weapons, you know, where where they're inoculating people and putting them out.
Yeah, it's so cool as well because it's almost silent.
Yes.
You know, like in other movies, you know, you'd get like the other guy turn around and be like, oh, what's that? Oh my God. You know, but no, this is like really quiet.
Yeah. And as this is happening, so Ricky, then Gunther says to Ricky, it's on emergency lighting. And he goes, yeah, emergency lights. And there's still some light. And then he goes, hey. And Ricky notices something's going on. And then Otto pulls out a gun and just shoots him.
Oh, I feel sorry for him.
Yeah, seriously.
He didn't do it. He was like, he was being really helpful, nice, you know. And even the other guy, the other bad guys, sort of feel a bit bad.
Well, because Gunther says to him, he says, "No shooting. Speak English."
Yeah.
And then one of the guys.
Well, that blew my mind as well, right? Yeah. That's another thing. We were talking about them all being giants of men, but also, why the hell have they brought a guy to this incredibly secret undercover mission? And he doesn't speak any English.
Well,
yeah, that seems like a disaster.
Yeah. Well, it is, obviously.
Yeah. Well, as you can see, yeah, it is. It doesn't. It's like you've screwed up the plan already.
That's right. And then one of them defends Otto and says, "Otto doesn't speak English. Do you, Otto?" And then like he grunts. And then I love what Gunther says. He goes, "Where the hell did we get this guy?"
I like the idea that, like, genuinely nobody knows. He just turns
right.
up one day.
And then the answer was, he's one of Targo's thugs. So the actor who plays Otto, okay, his name is Richard Council. You know, I never even thought about the fact that he would be an American. I don't know why. For some reason, I always thought he was European. You know?
Yeah, I just assumed, to be honest, he was German.
Yeah. And he... It's interesting. He's named after his older brother who died a year before he was born. You know,
that's
he was
kind of sad and nice,
right? Like he had a you know an older brother who died you know from SIDS, and he has 39 IMDb credits. But what's even more interesting is that so his first name his full name is Richard Edwin Council. So Richard is after his older brother who died, and Edwin is after a U.S. air pilot named Edwin Brender, Captain Edwin Brender, who lost his life flying to while helping out C-47 crews airdrop supplies to Allied ground forces along the Burma Road during World War II.
Oh, whoa. So like, okay. How did they come up, the family come up with that name? Did they just hear about this guy?
I don't know. That I didn't ask.
I was just sort of thinking like maybe the family knew him and did it in his honor, you know?
Yeah, maybe. That's what
it seems weird to just pick a random war hero.
Yeah.
Go, you know what? That guy.
That's right. My assumption is they must have known who he was maybe it was, you know, because he airdropped stuff, it saved, you know, Richard Council's father who was fighting there or something like that. I don't know.
Could be something like that. Yeah.
There must be some connection. And in IMDb, they actually even have a quote from Richard Council, which is very interesting, which is, "Get a life, share your life, enjoy your life while you have it. Be thankful for everything."
Oh, so, what a nice man. That's a good phrase.
So that's a great phrase, especially, you know, given the fact that it's, you know, the known information as to who he was named after. You know, he was named after a baby and a war hero. You know, so for him to say something, "You should be thankful for everything," is like, wow.
That's really nice. Yeah. Like, I kind of wish everyone had a story like that, whereas I'm just called John because my parents were like, "That's cool."
Yeah. Exactly. And then we jump back outside again, and we have Targo once again directing traffic. And he goes, "Pull all the way up, pull all the way, pull all the way." You know, he's very good at giving instructions. You know,
absolutely. You wouldn't argue with him.
And that's true. He's also the logistics man, no question about that.
Yeah, I mean, Simon's the brains in a way, but I think the two of them have to be a unit, or it won't work.
Correct. Correct. And then we have a quick shot of Otto back inside, and you know we see that he picks up Walsh's badge off of his corpse.
That's a clever idea, because you never know as a bad guy when that might come in handy.
That's true. That's true. And again, you know, it's definitely Chekhov's badge, you know, which is
Yeah,
great,
yeah.
because like you never would think that that's going to come up again later. You know, you just say, okay,
You better believe
he
it
wants a
will.
souvenir, he wants to put it there. So that's great writing, the choice to add that to that. So yeah, that's just really cool.
I love it. I love it. I think it's great.
Yeah, and that's all I have for this minute. Do you have anything else for this minute?
No, I think that's everything other than just me, yeah, maybe feeling bad for the murder. Terrible. Awful. I'm on a downer now.
You don't need to feel on a downer. Come on, you know.
Oh,
Yeah, you do know that the actor who plays Ricky, Anthony Peck, was also in the original Die Hard.
right, I well, preparing for this, I looked it up. I couldn't wrap my head around that. I was like, what? Who did he play? What? I was just so perplexed.
He played one of the guys that was around Al Powell the whole time. You know, he was like on
Oh.
a he was on a headset giving information and stuff like that. They show him a lot. He
And we're
apparently,
just supposed to like not question this.
yeah, well, of course not. And he,
Because who would be watching it minute by minute,
that's
right?
right. And apparently he's like a favorite of McTiernan, because he was also in The Hunt for October. And
Aha, there you go. I actually like it, despite me having a bit of fun there. I like it when that happens because I, you know, like when directors have a group of guys that they like, because I feel like it lends it more of a feel of like a theater troupe.
Yes.
You know, like these are my troupe who are going to do my latest work.
Correct.
You know.
Right. He was also in The Last Action Hero. He had a part in there.
Of course, yeah.
Yeah. So again, McTiernan likes him.
So do we.
Yes, that is true. I don't think he was in any of the earlier McTiernan stuff. No, he wasn't. Those are the only four McTiernan roles that he has. He unfortunately passed away a year after this movie came out of cancer.
Oh no, a year after.
Yeah, he
Oh.
died of cancer a year after this movie came out.
Oh, I'm on a downer again.
Well, but you don't have to be on a downer, because anytime you want to see him or think of him, you can watch the first 51 minutes of this movie where he, you know, where he appears,
That's
and he's
very
moving
true.
around. Yeah.
And to be honest, any excuse to watch this movie is always welcome.
There you go. All right, excellent. So the script. So once again, we're going to be jumping around in the script, but I will focus on the areas that we're talking about here. So we have Targo and the cops around the corner, descending to the platform. We hear silent gunshots, then the sound of bodies collapsing. Targo comes back up the staircase, nodding to Simon. Simon turns to the dump trucks and motions. Two men get out of the lead dump truck, dressed as NYPD patrolmen. They take the dead policeman's places behind the barricades. Mr. Luck, the driver of the lead dump truck, backs up to the cratered hole in Wall Street. The bed of the truck rises, dumping out portable steel ramping girders. Several other dump truck drivers leave their trucks. They pick up the ramping girders and begin erecting a ramp from the street level to the subway track below. A dump truck backs up to the crater. Other drivers offload a tunnel digger used in mining operations, a machine that digs huge holes, and a massive crate. So again, it's nice the way they do that. And then they skip three pages, and then they're in the lobby with you know you know the lobby with the six guys and including Simon. And it says a modest, nondescript bank lobby. It's quiet, little activity, no customers. Three guards are on duty, one behind the front desk, two by a metal detector in the corridor of the elevators. Three businessmen enter the lobby carrying briefcases. They speak with English accents. English businessman number one. I don't care what the exchange rate is, Freddie. The deal should rest on its financial merits. They move towards the front desk. Gentlemen, the businessman turns to the guard. What can I do for you? The first businessman then says, thank you. We're waiting for a colleague. So again, I like how they do it in the movie much better.
Yeah, I agree. I
Yeah,
agree.
this feels too disjointed with the way that they do it.
I think they made the right calls in all the changes. But again, I suppose it's the nature, as we said before, of how the movie, which you've talked about, you know, came about.
Yeah.
It's probably the cobbling together of different things. And then they sat down and went, right, let's make this how we want it.
Right. I mean, again, the script that I'm reading already, it's already John McClane. You know, it isn't the original versions where it was some other character.
Yeah, but even then, I think they probably didn't get it initially to the place they wanted it. They were like, right, this is fine. It's Die Hard now. Let's go and we'll figure out what we're doing.
Correct. I mean, a lot of the
and it worked.
A lot of the quips and things like that don't appear in the script at all.
Yeah.
You know,
that doesn't surprise me. Like they'll come up with them later.
That's right. That's John McClane will. You know, we'll let Bruce Willis think of those.
Yeah. Absolutely. Yeah. He's the only person who can deliver those lines that way anyway. Anyone, it's a bit like Arnold Schwarzenegger. I've always had the idea, I don't know if it's true, I've always believed deep down that when he gets signed onto a movie, he has a guy with him to add his quips in. Because the quips are always the same type of writing, the same type of gag. It's, you couldn't have that many Hollywood writers able to do an Arnie line. I think he had a guy.
That is interesting. Never thought about it from that perspective.
Find out one day.
Yeah. You know, what's your job? Oh, I'm in charge of thinking of quips for movies.
I reckon they're all the same. Doesn't matter what one, if you're watching Terminator, Predator, Running Man, they're the same gags.
That's right. Well, they just kept using "I'll be back" over and over. You know.
They do start doing that after a while. It's like, oh god! But apparently he does that in real life as well. His family, his like kids and stuff, were saying like, oh yeah, whenever we've got our friends around, he always just, you know, he'll like, you know, pop in and say, does anyone want any snacks or any, you know, lemonade or anything? He'd be like, I'll just go get it for you. I'll be back. He loves doing it. It's like, oh god, Dad, what are you doing?
Well, come on, it's what made him famous.
I like to think maybe Bruce Willis did that for a while, a few quips. Sadly, not anymore.
Yeah, obviously. Unfortunately, from what I understand,
don't be on a downer again.
From what I understand, he can't talk anymore. So,
yeah. Oh, one of the best talkers of all time.
Yeah. Unfortunately, but at least we have these movies to go back and look at.
Exactly.
So that's already something. All right, so every Tuesday we have a segment called Trilogy Tuesday, where my guests will give their top five trilogies. So, John, why don't you start from your number five and work your way up, and then I'll tell you what Niall chose, because I know that would be your next guess.
First of all, I've got to preface this with something, right? I had a difficult time choosing for one factor.
Because a lot of the best trilogies have more than three movies in it.
This is the issue, yes. Right? What do you count? What do you not count? For instance, I'm going to spoil something here. I didn't include, because I love Alien, Aliens, and Alien 3. I know Alien 3 some people don't like. But I didn't include it, because now there's been about 8 million Alien movies.
Well, in all fairness, when you talk about Alien, Alien does have a fourth movie to it before they even started with all the extra stuff.
Exactly. So I immediately was like, I'm not going to count it. I'm gonna scratch that off. Same with Indiana Jones. I've scratched that off. People might wish there wasn't a fourth movie and a fifth movie, but regardless, they're there.
Right. Okay.
To be honest, and I'm going to say it now, same with Die Hard.
Okay.
That's the true. Fourth one it's okay, but no one wants the fifth one to exist ever. No. It's one of the worst movies I've ever watched.
That is true.
But it does exist. So we're in this position. So I tried to keep it to ones, except for my number one, but I'll explain. I tried to keep it to ones where there were three. So it might be very different to other people.
Okay. That's part of the fun of it, the diversity.
That's what I thought. And I was like, I'm going to really think of just three.
Okay.
Ones that are trilogies. So number five... I've got the great British trilogy. We call it the Cornetto trilogy, where it's Shaun of the Dead, Hot Fuzz, and The World's End. Mm-hmm. You know, with Simon Pegg.
Yes.
Because I mean, the first two, especially over here, they were like transformative for cinema. You know, World's End didn't hit as much for a lot of people, but I think it's a grower. It's one of those, if you rewatch it, it improves. I like it a lot. Then next, I don't imagine other people have picked this, but you never know. Naked Gun. Because I think all three of them are some of the funniest comedies ever
made. Okay, you are the first person to mention it.
I was hoping I was. I was hoping, because at first I was like, wait, were there more? And I was like, no, there were three. There were three. There's the series, right, which came first. Mm-hmm. Doesn't count. So Naked Gun, amazing. Apparently they're rebooting it or something, but don't do that. Just leave it.
Oh, come on. You can't do it without Leslie Nielsen. It just won't work.
You can't. No. Nobody can fill those shoes. Surely you doesn't matter how funny you are. Number three, I have got, I imagine people have said this one, Back to the Future.
Yes, there are six other people that have listed it, and you are the 11th person.
I thought there would be. But you know what? I don't care. It deserves to be on every list. It's so good. I think it's ahead of its time as well with the way they shot, you know, two of them back to back and mm-hmm. everything, because you didn't get that a lot.
No, not in the 80s.
In those days. No, and sequels were still kind of.
Around the time when they started doing sequels, but
Yeah, because sequels beforehand were always like, well, we'll do a sequel to just get some money, but we won't give it any budget. They were always like lesser,
that's right,
weren't they? They were lesser.
That's money. Right.
But yeah, I mean, the next one's going to be an obvious one as well, probably. But again, I don't care. I don't care if I'm basic. Number two, The Lord of the Rings.
Yeah, there are a few people that mentioned it.
I thought there would be. And people might go, well, there's other ones. There's The Hobbit. That's different. That's different. That doesn't count. Right. Just because it ties in. If it ties in, that's not the same thing.
They have one character, or they have two characters that are connected. That's it.
Exactly. And let's be honest, we could all have done without The Hobbit.
The truth is it would have been much better if they didn't drag it out into three movies.
Absolutely. You could even argue for two.
Correct.
I wouldn't do two, but you could make an argument for two that's movies. Right. But three, that's wild. And we all saw what happened.
Yeah.
It's one of those that I still do watch it sometimes because it's got some good stuff in it, but it's not the same. Lord of the Rings is actually like a masterpiece.
Right. Lord of the Rings, you can sit and you can watch it and you can say, I have 10 hours, I'm going to sit and watch it. I'm going to love it and everything like that. The Hobbit, you're like, oh my God, this part is just so boring. When will it get to the better parts? You know, Lord of the Rings, you don't have that. It's every moment is like, wow. And you're like, wow. 10.5 hours just passed,
Oh, yeah. It's wild. Like, it doesn't feel long
correct
to me, even though it's like the most ridiculously long thing you've ever watched.
But The Hobbit does.
yeah, it does a bit. Oh, jeez. But number one, and people might be like, oh, you haven't said Batman yet. I'm not going to say Batman.
Because there's no, just not a trilogy.
And I'll explain that in a minute. Well, there is one. Yeah. But my favorite film series of all time is, and I'm going to count this as a trilogy, even though people could say I'm being a hypocrite here, Star Wars.
The original trilogy. Because
it was originally a trilogy. The original, of course. It was originally a trilogy. The other stuff came later as a separate, like, almost like a, well, it's a prequel. You know, it's in the name. It's not quite the same to me. Because despite what George Lucas says, he never planned those. He's a liar. Right. I love him, but he's a liar. I'm calling you out.
Okay, let me rebut that. I don't think he's a liar because I remember when Return of the Jedi came out. I'm slightly older than you. Okay. So I remember when Return of the Jedi came out and there was talk even at that time that George Lucas had this plan of these nine movies.
Oh, you might have had the idea to do more, but I don't think for one second he had them written. He claims that it was all planned out.
No, from what I understand, he had a general basis for it. I knew as a kid there was the whole story of, Anakin and Obi-Wan fighting and Anakin falling into a volcano and getting massive.
How did we all know that, by the way? Because I knew that as a kid as well, but there was no media with
it. No, there was no media, but that was something that was mentioned at some point. You know, when? I couldn't tell you.
But that's the thing. But he claimed he had the whole thing, and it's like, no, right. No. He even made stuff up in the original. You know, he clearly didn't have Leia written as the sister. And to pretend that he did, it's like, no.
Well, Man Magazine, I remember when Man Magazine did their Star Wars, Return of the Jedi thing. And, you know, they're telling the story, and then Luke finds out that, I think Obi-Wan says to Luke, no, there's another, and he goes, it's your sister. And he goes, oh, it must be Leia, because there's no other woman in the series.
That's what it is, really.
Yeah, pretty much.
But here's me making fun of it. But yeah, it's my favorite film series of all time. I love it. I love it. I love it. Controversially, my favorite is Return of the Jedi. But at the same time, I'm comparing perfection to perfection. Okay, it doesn't really make a difference.
I'm a huge fan of Return of the Jedi. It is the movie that I've seen the most of any movie in my life.
Same.
Okay.
Absolutely.
I've seen it probably over 80 times. Yeah.
Now, to me, it encapsulates everything I like, because it's got the lightest stuff, you know, the Ewoks and all that. But then it's got the darkest. People always talk about Empire being dark. Jedi's got the darkest stuff with the Empire.
Yes, that is true.
And that plays off each other quite well. I like the tonal shift. I understand some people like a consistent tone. Yeah. Whatever.
I mean,
but for me, that's the
Return of the Jedi. I saw 17 times in the theater.
Whoa, okay.
And I was nine when it came out.
Whoa, that's amazing.
And I used to be able to. Tell people, you know, who I saw each viewing with.
But then you saw it too many times.
No, never. No. It's a movie. I could watch that movie over and over and over. I watch it a few times a year, every year.
Same. I have a sort of policy of I have to at least once a year watch all the Star Wars and all the Lord of the Rings.
Okay.
It's a thing I do. Fair. But yep, they're going on. Oh, and I also do it with Twin Peaks, but that's more of an undertaking, you know. But people listening might be like, well, you didn't pick Christopher Nolan's Batman. Yeah, I didn't. And it's because I don't really like The Dark Knight Rises that much. It's all right. It's grown on me a bit over the years. When I saw it in the cinema, I was actually angry.
Really? I loved it.
But over the years, I'm like, I've softened on it a bit more. I'm like, ah, well, you know.
I loved it. I still think that The Dark Knight is the best of the three. I really know how to appreciate Dark Knight Rises. Yeah.
It might be hurt by The Dark Knight being so good. That might be part of the problem. That's literally
because it doesn't reach the same level.
Yeah. No.
Okay, that's fair.
Which obviously they didn't expect. Like, I get the, you know, the understanding is that Heath Ledger was going to have a part to play in it in some way. But obviously that wasn't going to happen.
That wasn't in the cards
anymore. No. So, you know, maybe it's not their fault it couldn't hit the same heights, but, you know, yeah, over the years I've grown to like it a lot more, but still rules it out on my top trilogies.
Right. Excellent. Very good. You want to hear what Niall chose?
I'm trying to think what he might have chose. Yeah, go ahead. Well, go ahead, Tom.
You only have one that coincides.
Stop.
No, Back to the Future.
Maybe because he's not considering Star Wars as a trilogy. Because I know Star Wars is like his favorite thing as well.
He didn't put it on the list. So.
That'll be why, because now there's like 8,000.
Right. So he did Back to the Future as his number 5. Bill and Ted's number 4.
Oh.
Number 3 is the Dollars trilogy. Number 2 is the Ginger Snaps trilogy. And
I forgot there was even a third one.
I don't even know what it is. And his number 1 is The Dark Knight. So
I knew he would put that in. I knew, because he liked The Dark Knight Rises from day one.
Yes, he mentioned that. He did mention it.
I had a few others that I was thinking of putting on, like there was Mad Max, but then I was like, well, again, does that count? Because you've got Fury Road.
Yeah,
now,
but it goes
Furiosa.
But it goes the same way with the Star Wars. You can, you know, make the difference. You can say, okay, you know, when this came out, it was different.
Yeah, it's a tough one. That's why I was umming and ahhing over that one. I was like, well, it could count because it implies that it's the same Max, but it doesn't explicitly say it's the same Max. You could believe it's just a completely separate thing and be like, okay. And one of my favorite Japanese ones is I'm going to be pretentious and say it Japanese style, so you don't know I'm talking about the American one, Ringu.
Okay. The ring. Yeah.
But a lot of people don't like the third one. So I was hesitant because I thought people might attack me.
I don't think anyone's going to attack you.
The third one's a bit weird. The third one mixes up the formula into a very strange way, where the villain, well, I say villain, the victim slash villain, Sadako, it turns out that she was split into a good version of herself and an evil version of herself, and the evil version is the one you see like in the tape, and it's like, oh yeah, it's getting a bit far fetched, but it's still spooky as hell. So yeah, I enjoy it.
Okay, that's fair. All right, great. So, John, would you like to once again tell people where they can find you?
Yes, if you want me podcasting, you can find me at Bat Minute, Miami Minutes, and Hedwig Inch by Angry Inch. And I don't know, why don't you check out the band I'm part of, Pete Bentham and the Dinner Ladies. It's the most English band ever, though. So if you don't understand why I'm in drag dressed as a lunch lady, then you might be quite confused overall.
And finding me is very simple. Just do a quick search for Move Your Own Minute. You can find me on Instagram. You can find me on Twitter. You can find me on Facebook. You can find me on my website, moveyourownminute.com. And if you feel like sending me an email, you can send it to moveyourownminute@moveyourown.net. So until tomorrow, yippee-ki-yay!
Yippee-ki-yay!
Johnny comes marching home again. Hurrah! Hurrah! We'll give him a hearty welcome then. Hurrah! Hurrah! The men will cheer, the boys will shout, the ladies, they will all turn out, and we'll all feel glad when Johnny comes marching home.